Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right, then. Let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
I see you there, friend. Yeah, welcome back. You know, it's a funny thing. I've spent all winter complaining about the freezing 80-degree weather over here. But now with spring around the corner and the nice warm weather, I kind of miss it, you know? You too, huh? All right, well, I'll tell you what. Let's cool down with a little winter story tonight. Come on in, friend. You too, Chester. All right, so check out simplyscarypodcast.com and become a patron. For as little as $7.99 a month, you can get the entire catalog ad-free and available for download or streaming. And if you're feeling saucy, there is also patreon.com/DrewBlood. We have a good time over there. All right, smoke 'em if you got 'em and drink those glasses to the bottom, y'all. Because old Drew Blood got a tale to tell. And tonight, we welcome back R.K. Combrink by way of our friends at Velox Books. This one comes from his very popular book, These Lonely Places, which I can't recommend enough. In this one, we visit Griffithstown, Ohio, a quaint little town with a less quaint local legend. So without further delay, y'all, from author R.K. Combrink, I give you The Visitor. From the November 3rd edition of the Tusk Valley Times Reporter. Small Town Celebrates Mythical Being. It's time once again for the greater Tuscarawas County area to cast a bemused eye down Route 77 to Griffithstown. It's the weekend after Halloween, and their annual Autumn Harvest Sasquatch Festival kicks off this Friday at dusk. Far from a typical small town festival, Griffithstown celebration revolves around the area's notorious reputation as a hotspot for sightings of the legendary creature known as Sasquatch. For decades, Griffithstown, along with the nearby town of East Church and the adjacent Amy Pierce Township, has boasted frequent sightings of what eyewitnesses claim is Ohio's version of the infamous Ape Man. In the last 35 years, nearly 70 of these accounts have been reported to the Tuscarawas County Sheriff's Office. Also reported are strange howling sounds attributed to the creature, and occasional sets of oversized footprints, one set of which was photographed in 1979 and published in a book about UFOs and other strange phenomena. Far from keeping their notoriety hush-hush, the citizens of Griffithstown celebrate their status as Ohio's cryptozoological epicenter. Each year, since 1980, the town puts on their Autumn Harvest Sasquatch Festival the first weekend of November. The festival's activities include arts and crafts, games, rides, and a large parade, among other things, all in commemoration of their alleged hairy outdoor neighbor. The festival atmosphere is one of high spirits and good cheer. Many of the festival goers boast having caught glimpses of the elusive beast themselves, but no one fears for their safety. They regard the creature as a town treasure.
I've seen him 4 or 5 times in the last 15 years or so,
says Merton Squibb, 51, of Amy Pierce Township.
Last time he was out at the back of my south field standing at the fence. He got no reason to hurt nobody. We all want to keep him safe.
Article continued on page C4.
It was Thanksgiving, and the children watched the snow with squealing delight. The family was spread across 3 round tables in the dining room at the back of the house. It was comfortably warm and lit by the lamps that cast a cheerful glow. Conversation at the kids' table turned quickly to the impending Christmas vacation, Santa Claus, and what presents they expected to find under their trees. Cliff sat at his table, nibbling on a buttered roll and looking out the window at the whitewashed scenery with disquiet. He didn't share the children's enthusiastic opinion of snow. Brooke, sitting next to him, was talking to her cousin Libby about something, laughing occasionally. In his own world, Cliff stared out into the gloomy afternoon and sighed inwardly. He was considering getting up to grab another cup of punch when he realized that Libby's husband was looking at him expectantly. Cliff suddenly wondered if Mark had been trying to talk to him. Mark was a small, timid-looking man with thinning hair and a growing beer gut. He seldom spoke to anyone, and Cliff had sort of forgotten he was with them at all. Now he flushed with embarrassment. It was clear from the look on Mark's face that he had said something to Cliff and was awaiting a response.
"Sorry, man, I was off in Oz. What'd you say?"
"I said it's gonna be a rough ride to our place if this snow keeps up."
Shit, Cliff thought. He's right. Cliff and Brooke had made the 4-hour drive that very morning, heading straight to Aunt Mindy's, but were staying at Mark and Libby's new house, which they had only just moved into the weekend before. They had been remarking off and on all day about how far off the beaten path it was.
"We've hardly seen more than a couple of cars go by all week long," Libby had said.
She had meant it to be a boast about the peace and quiet, but Cliff was a city boy and wasn't as charmed by the stillness of the country as his wife's cousin.
"You guys should be careful when you're coming out that way. There ain't no lights or anything."
Mark nodded and took a sip of punch.
"It's real dark." "Ooh, and spooky too."
Libby leaned forward and turned her attention to Cliff.
"We live right up the road from the Warlock's grave. Has Bebe ever told you about the Warlock's grave?"
"No." Cliff cast a sidelong glance at Brooke and smiled crookedly at the nickname she hated. "Bebe sure hasn't." Brooke rolled her eyes at him.
"It's just a story the kids around here scare themselves with."
She turned to Libby.
"Geez, you guys moved all the way out there?"
She shook her head.
"That really is the boonies." "I know it is, but I love it."
Libby nodded, her tall, teased bangs swaying back and forth.
"Anyway, Cliff, there's a little graveyard off the side of the road, not even a mile up from our new house. It's very old. In fact, I think it's a registered historical site. In the very back of the cemetery, near where the fence meets the woods, there's a grave back by itself, away from the other stones."
"And this would be the Warlock's grave?"
"Yes. The name on the stone is worn away, though everybody thinks it says David something. But the dates you can read."
There was a space of seconds where the room was quiet. Everyone was listening along with Cliff, even though they all knew the story well. Libby surveyed her audience with a grin and continued.
"Born October 31st, 1781. Died October 31st, 1906.
She paused for a heartbeat or two to let the information sink in, and then went on.
"Underneath that it says, may he never wake."
Cliff felt an unexpected chill slip down his neck and along the backs of his arms. He mentally calculated the age that the dates on the supposed gravestone suggested. Then Brooke was standing behind him, her hands resting on his shoulders. She picked up the thread of the story, speaking in a low, breathy voice.
At some point, people started saying it was a warlock that was buried there, and that his ghost haunted the cemetery and the woods around there. People don't like driving past there at night, and sometimes they say they can see a tall white figure standing at the wall waving to them as they passed by. Sometimes people even disappear out there.
Wow. Cliff leaned back in his chair. Let's stay at the Motel 6 instead. He chuckled and the spell was broken. Brooke and Libby burst into giggles, and Libby's two little boys did the same. Aunt Mindy smiled broadly and asked who wanted some pumpkin pie, and everyone raised their hands. Mark sat quietly, looking out the window into the gathering dark.
Damn, it's starting to snow again.
He said it out loud, but no one was listening to him. Sometime after dinner, the gentle snow shower that had been falling so gracefully earlier became a swirling haze of white. The local newscasters on TV warned people to stay off the roads and batten down for the night, especially in the rural areas. Libby and Mark had a Jeep and decided to brave the storm to go visit Mark's family. Cliff and Brooke had stayed behind, not wanting to risk it in their little car. But around 8:20, the clouds broke up some, the snow slowed, and it seemed that this might be the time for anyone visiting family to make a run for home. They bid everyone a good night and a happy Thanksgiving, and said they were going on to Libby and Mark's. Cliff and Brooke set off through the center of town, and after a few twists and turns, they finally found their way onto Gimlin Road, which led to Libby and Mark's new house. They drove for what felt like a long time, and the landscape became desolate. As far as other houses, they had only passed two in the last 10 minutes, and these looked dark and not well kept, maybe even abandoned. The scenery was pretty, though, and Cliff watched it go by from the passenger seat. On one side of the road, the ground climbed up a gentle rocky slope. Short, stout pine trees grew in sparse little patches near the bottom, giving way to their taller cousins as they marched up and away. On the other side lay winter barren fields, stamped flat by the cruel weather of late November. These fields sprawled from the edge of the road until they gave way to dense woods. A sparkling blanket of snow covered the fields, marred only by the sporadic tracks of animals that had passed by.
Oh my God, I'm so full. I'm not sure I can stay awake.
Cliff took one last drag on his cigarette. He opened his window enough to shove the butt through, and a whistling blast of cold air snatched it from his fingers. Brooke grinned.
Yeah, I feel more stuffed than the damn turkey.
It was very cozy inside the car with the heater going full blast and Nat King Cole on the radio. Still, Brooke was driving cautiously. The road seemed to have been hastily plowed a couple of hours earlier, but it was still slick with moisture, and a stiff wind was blowing swirls of snow everywhere.
I kind of wish I'd known they were going to Mark's mom's house to eat again. We could have just stayed at Aunt Mindy's.
Oh, well, no big deal.
Cliff sounded casual, but also wished they had stayed at Aunt Mindy's. They could be playing euchre with Brooke's brother right now, or in their room fooling around quietly. Instead, here they were, feeling their way along this slippery back road, trying to find a house they had never been to.
I'm sorry,
Brooke sighed. Cliff reached out a hand and put it on Brooke's leg.
It's not your fault. They're the ones that... Holy shit! What is that?
He sat straight up in his seat, putting both hands on the dashboard.
What's what?
Brooke's eyes didn't leave the road.
Slow down! Slow down! You don't see that?
Well, I'm trying to watch the road so we don't die.
Seriously, slow down and look over here!
Cliff pointed out of his corner of the windshield and rolled his window down, letting in a sheet of cold air that smacked him across the face, making him wince.
Jesus!
Brooke slowed them to a crawl and looked out the windshield between the swishing wipers where Cliff was pointing. A good distance down the road, silhouetted against the white of the snowfall, was a large someone or something standing at the side of the road.
That is one really tall guy.
Cliff had his head out the window. He squinted his eyes and cupped his hand over his brow to keep errant flakes out of his face.
What's he doing out there?
He shook his head.
Damn, that guy looks as tall as our living room ceiling.
They were barely moving now as Brooke pulled off the gas and eased on the brake. The softly frozen crust of snow crunched under the tires as they crawled along.
Clifford, that's an optical illusion. Nobody's that tall.
She continued to look from the road to the figure, hulking beyond the reach of their headlights.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
On the radio, Nat King Cole had given way to Elvis trilling through Blue Christmas, and Cliff turned it off. Visibility had been greatly reduced as the snow began to rev up again, and everything outside the car seemed to be swaying and shimmering.
It looks pretty goddamn big to me, though, and I think it's moving.
The car was now inching along at barely 10 miles an hour as Brooke lightly tapped the gas every few seconds to keep them moving. They hadn't seen another car in either direction since they'd pulled onto this road, and it was like there was no one else in the world besides them and the strange visitor up ahead. Despite their slow progress, they were getting closer to the thing, and it appeared to be wearing a fur coat. It was still unlit by their headlights, but both of them had the impression of a shaggy, wind-blown outline.
Are there bears out here?
Brooke asked suddenly.
Well?
Cliff paused and licked his lips, contemplating.
I mean, I don't really know. I didn't think so, but I guess it could be a bear. I don't know how long they can stand up on two legs like that.
But it could be a bear, you think?
That would be one big-ass bear, but yeah, maybe.
There was a long pause.
Makes more sense than a man, right?
Cliff pulled his head back in the window and glanced at Brooke. Brooke shrugged.
I mean, some kind of animal. It's obviously not... Whoa!
Her nose wrinkled as a foul and powerful odor swept through Cliff's open window on a gust of air. It was a smell that reminded her of rotten garbage mixed with spoiled meat. It was a hot, wild smell out of place on a cold autumn night.
Ew, God, that's awful.
Her voice sounded as if she had suddenly come down with a bad cold. Cliff's face seemed to collapse in on itself as he recoiled from the stench.
God, maybe the bear is guarding a kill or something. I don't know what else would smell like.
His voice trailed off as their headlights finally washed over the thing and reflected back at them from its enormous silver eyes. It turned its shaggy head and shoulders to look right at Cliff. It was definitely not a bear. Suddenly it seemed as if time was speeding up and slowing down simultaneously. When it turned its face into the light, they saw it very clearly despite the screen of fallen snow. Beneath the outrageous shining eyes was a flat leathery nose and a wide jutting lower jaw. Cliff's eyes weren't sharp enough to pick it up, but Brooke could see long teeth or tusks thrusting out of its mouth. Moonlight glinted off of them. They looked sharp. It was covered in long, thick, dark hair, with slumped shoulders and huge arms, ending in hands that hung down almost below its knees. Not paws. Hands. Hands that were tipped with very dangerous-looking thorny claws. They looked like they were made for opening up the bellies of elk or moose to spill blood and steaming ropes of guts upon the cold ground below.
Cliff, what is it?
Brooke's hands were clenched around the steering wheel, the skin pulled tight around her knuckles.
Jesus, I don't know.
It came out in a breathless whisper.
But I think we should turn around.
Cliff began pushing himself back against the seat. The smell was even stronger, a thickening blanket of stink.
Brooke, turn the car around.
Brooke nodded curtly, not needing to be told twice. She pressed the gas and yanked the wheel to the left. Her eyes squeezed tightly shut as she attempted an immediate U-turn. As the car turned, it hit a slick spot on the road and began a wild shimmy and fishtail.
Shit!
Brooke screamed.
Shit, shit, shit!
The car did a full 180, catching more wet, slippery snow and continued to spin, threatening to toss itself off the road. The front end swung, the wheel steering Brooke instead of the other way around. As she fought for control, they flew right past the spot where the shadowy figure lurked. For a moment, the strobing headlights illuminated it clearly. But in their panic, neither Cliff nor Brooke noticed. Cliff slid over till he was pressed up against Brooke's side. He reached out and grabbed the wheel.
Hit the brakes and let go of the wheel!
As Cliff grabbed the wheel, Brooke let her hands fly away and shoved her foot down onto the brake as hard as she could. The front end jerked and Cliff pulled the wheel hard to the right. The back end swung sharply to the left, tires screeching, half-frozen sludge and snow flying up from beneath the back wheels, and the car came to a rough stuttering halt. After taking a few ragged breaths, Cliff realized that they had stopped and scooted back to his seat. He leaned his head against the headrest and draped his hand across his eyes.
Holy shit! You okay?
He stopped abruptly, and in a frenzy of flailing arms and legs, spun around in his seat to look out the back windshield. The car had finished at a point past where the open field ended, and small plots of trees and brush made their way up to the gravelly shoulder. The trees were tall and thin and reached their branches out and over the road, and ticker bushes crouched amongst the trunks. From where they sat, the long white field was still visible, glowing with moonlight, and Cliff saw that the gigantic dark shape had shambled out into the road and was heading towards them. It pulled itself along in a disconcerting, loose-boned shuffle, its knees bent, its arms reaching out for them. Its eyes gleamed like stainless steel, and Cliff watched, hypnotized for several seconds as it dragged itself after him. Then its lower jaw dropped open like a trap door full of upward-thrusting spikes, and it screamed. The sound filled the cold autumn air and seemed to make it colder. Cliff grimaced, transfixed, sudden tears forming at the corners of his eyes and spilling down over his cheeks. With a jerk of his head, Cliff shook off his paralysis and turned to Brooke. She was also staring out the back window, mouth agape, a puzzled look in her eyes.
Brooke?
Cliff tugged gently at her arm.
Hey, come on, babe. We've got to go.
Brooke closed her mouth, turned back in her seat hurriedly, and hit the gas. As the car leapt forward into the shadows beneath the overhanging trees, Cliff looked out the back window again. A small hiss of air escaped his lips. The thing on the road had reached the spot where the car had been just moments before and was still following them. It was not far behind them, and Cliff finally got a really good look at it. Its fur was matted, long in some spots and much shorter and coarse in others. Cliff knew that those arms could rip a man to shreds with very little effort, but it was the eyes he kept coming back to. Huge ovals with no visible pupils or irises, just protuberant reflective silver orbs, motionless and expressionless. They were picking up speed now, and Brooke gave it more gas.
Hey, turn around.
She tapped Cliff's hip.
You've got to help me look for Libby's house.
Her voice was shaky.
Jesus, Brooke, it's following us.
Cliff still knelt on his seat facing the back of the car.
chasing us!
Okay, Cliff, that's why we need to get to Libby's.
Cliff finally tore his gaze from the back windshield and looked at his wife.
Are you crazy? We're not stopping.
He turned back to look again, but they had pulled too far ahead for him to see it clearly anymore. He finally turned around and sat in his seat. He pulled a cigarette out, pushed the car's lighter into its slot. Tall trees lined both sides of the road now, forming a dark archway. Underneath this canopy, the snow couldn't fall as thickly. There hadn't been a street light or a house for miles.
Call them and tell them they should take the boys back to Aunt Mindy's. Tell them.
The lighter popped out, fully charged, and Cliff lit up. He took a long drag, opened his window a crack, and exhaled, getting ready to finish his thought.
Tell them what?
Brooke realized she was rocketing along at what was becoming an unsafe speed and eased on the brake a little. A leaning yellow sign came up on the right, warning of a bend ahead.
Should I tell them we just saw a monster and that it's chasing us?
As if it had heard, the creature let out another blood-freezing scream from somewhere in the darkness behind them. Both Cliff and Brooke winced as if they had been struck. They rounded the bend in the road, and the headlights picked out what seemed to be a derelict building on the left-hand side of the road. A rusted-out car, broken chairs, a lot of crumbling cement litter in the lot. It was the closest thing to a house they'd seen.
Yeah, I think maybe you should. It might follow us straight to them.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Brooke sounded a little hysterical. She took one hand off the wheel and mimed holding the phone to her ear.
Hey, Libby, it's Brooke. Yeah, just wanted to let you know that me and Cliff just saw Bigfoot, and he's on his way to your house to eat all of us for dinner. Yeah. Oh, you invited him? Oh, well, that's fine then. Bye.
She put her hand back on the wheel.
Like that?
No, not like that, smartass. They wouldn't have invited them. They've already had two dinners.
Brooke smiled despite her fear. In a moment, they were both cracking up, and a moment after that, they were both laughing uncontrollably. She slowed the car to a stop in the middle of the road and let the wave of terror-fueled hilarity pass. As soon as the car stopped and they were motionless in the dark, the mood sobered quickly. Their laughter trickled to a series of hiccups and sighs until there was nothing left. Brooke's eyes searched the rearview mirror for signs of anything coming up the road behind them. Cliff finished his cigarette and dropped it out the window.
So you're right.
Cliff rubbed his hand across his mouth as he considered their situation.
We can't tell them like that.
He shook his head and looked at Brooke with one eyebrow raised.
Have I ever told you that I fucking hate the country?
You and me both. I can't imagine they would move all the way out here.
Probably because monsters and warlocks really bring down the cost of property.
Get my phone out of my purse.
Brooke checked the mirror again. Cliff reached down between his feet and into her purse. He fished around for a moment and then pulled out her cell phone.
What do you think I should tell them?
He flipped it open. With his thumb, he began pushing buttons, searching her contacts list.
Well?
Brooke said, coming up with an idea on the spot.
Let's say there was some crazy guy with a gun who ran out on the road and started shooting at us. We'll say he started chasing us down the road and that he might be headed their way. How's that?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Cliff studied the screen of Brooke's phone with squinted eyes, his face glowing blue in the light it cast.
Jeez, where is she in here?
She's under LB. Here, hand it to me.
As Brooke started to reach for the phone, another yowl and scream rang out across the night. It didn't sound very far off. Brooke gasped, her face twisting into a mask of terror.
Cliff?
Shit!
Cliff shot a look out the back window and then turned back to the front.
You just drive. I'll call them.
Brooke turned, started up the car, and a moment later they were on their way. As they sped off down the blacktop, another shriek pierced the dark. Cliff found Libby's number in Brooke's contact list and pressed send. He held the phone up to his ear and frowned.
Hey, Libby, it's Cliff. Me and Brooke were on our way to your house when we ran into... Well, we ran into some trouble. We think you guys should take the kids and head back to Aunt Mindy's. We'll explain when we meet up there. It's pretty urgent, so give us a call back when you get this.
He pressed end and rested the phone against his thigh.
Voicemail.
Maybe they're still at Mark's mom's house.
As they sped past, the trees on the right-hand side of the road dropped back, letting the moonlight fall through once again, brightening the snow-frosted scenery. Lying gray and ominous in the illuminated gap was a cemetery. It looked very old. They caught a momentary glimpse of it. Flat weathered stones jutting out from the ground, pinned in by an ancient stone wall.
Libby said their house was the next thing after the graveyard.
Brooke started slow in the car.
On the right. Help me look for it.
Cliff was trying the phone again. When he got Libby's voicemail once more, he snapped the phone shut.
They better be home and just ignoring our calls.
He opened Brooke's phone one more time and hit send. After they passed the cemetery, the trees came back up to the road in thick, and Brooke almost drove past Libby and Mark's house. It was set a good 50 yards back off the road and was walled in by the woods around it. An uneven gravel driveway led up and around to the back of the house. From what they could see, the house was as dark inside as the yard was outside. It was a one-story brick box with a sagging roof. There were two large windows at the front of the house on either side of the tin storm door. Both had screens that were riddled with rips and holes. The whole place looked defeated. Brooke pulled the car up to where the front walk curved around to meet the driveway and stopped. There was no way to see through the windows because the curtains were drawn, but there didn't appear to be any lights on behind them. Brooke and Cliff sat silently for a few moments, considering what to do next. Cliff sighed.
All right, now what?
Brooke bit her lower lip.
Well, should we go up and knock? See if they're in there?
I'd really rather not get out of the car if possible.
Cliff's tone was matter-of-fact, but his eyes looked haunted. Brooke looked back up at the house.
Hold on. Let's call Aunt Mindy. Maybe she knows where they are.
Cliff nodded.
That's a great idea.
He held the phone out to his wife. She took the phone from him, scrolling through her recent calls till she found Aunt Mindy's number. She sent the call and held the phone up to her ear, pulling her long hair back behind her neck with her other hand. A moment later, she looked to Cliff and gave a thumbs up.
Hey, Aunt Mindy. No, not yet. Hey, listen, do you know if Libby and Mark are still at his mom's house?
She listened, her smile fading.
Uh-huh. Well, because we're at their house and they're not here.
Suddenly, her eyes widened with realization.
Wait, their Jeep's not here. They must be out. Libby just wasn't... What? They do?
Cliff watched her expression fall again.
They did?
She heaved a heavy sigh.
Okay, well, we'll check. Yeah, you try to call her too, okay? All right, bye.
She set the phone on the dashboard and looked up at the house. Cliff waited for her to say something. After 10 seconds had gone by, he spoke.
So, what did Aunt Mindy say? I hadn't even thought of their car not being here. Does she know where they are?
They park up around the back of the house. They go in through the kitchen door back there.
Right. Okay.
Libby called a few minutes after we left to let Mindy know they were home and to see if we were still there. They had just put the kids to bed. They were worried we might not be able to find the place.
Huh. Cliff pondered this, and picked Brooke's phone up off the dashboard to look at the clock. 8:42.
So did they all decide to go to bed or something? Why aren't the lights on?
Cliff, I'm scared.
Brooke was still staring out the window, her fingers tapping on the steering wheel.
I think we need to go around back and see if their car's there.
Okay. What if it's not?
We leave them a note on the back door telling them to come straight to Aunt Mindy's.
Why don't you just text her?
I'll do that too, but she's not answering her phone. Maybe it's dead or she has the ringer off. We need to leave a note just in case.
All right. And what if the truck is there?
Brooke looked at him.
I don't know. Knock, I guess.
All right, here. He picked Brooke's purse up from the floor and handed it to her.
Find a pen and something to write on.
Brooke turned the interior light on and ducked through her purse. She pulled out an old receipt and set it on the dashboard.
What are we doing?
Write your note. Just come back to Aunt Mindy's immediately and sign it. I'm going to take it and go around back. If the car isn't there, I'm going to put the note somewhere near the door where they'll see it.
He looked out the passenger window into the dark outside.
And if their truck does happen to be there, then I'll go up and pound on the door a couple of times. If no lights come on and nobody answers, then we're booking it the hell out of here back to Aunt Mindy's. And we can all talk about where to go from there.
Can't we just drive around to see? I don't want you getting out of the car and walking around out there any more than you do. And it's windy out. What if the note blows away?
Well, Brooke, I mean, it's the best we can do, you know?
He blew a long breath between his lips.
And I'm afraid of getting stuck back there. This isn't a Jeep, and this driveway is terrible. God knows what it's like back there. And I don't want to stick around out here. That thing could be anywhere.
Brooke looked out into the night.
Okay, do it fast then.
She leaned forward, holding the receipt against the center of the steering wheel, and wrote the note.
Here.
She handed it to Cliff.
I love you.
Cliff took the note from her, leaned forward, and planted a quick kiss on her mouth.
Love you too. I'll be right back.
Cliff opened the passenger door and stepped out onto the drive. The sound of gravel beneath his feet seemed very loud to his ears. It was grave quiet and very cold. The only sound was the wind sighing through the trees, making the branches clatter together. He walked up to the house and passed around to the side and hurried on around back. He turned a corner and frowned. Libby and Mark's old Jeep was sitting as silent and dark as everything else. He could also see the back door of the house laying discarded in the snow next to the truck. It had been violently torn off its hinges. Splintered wood from the door hung in the space where the door had been. Pieces of lath lay on and around the short steps that led up to the kitchen. He took a timid step towards the yawning doorway, and then another, till he finally reached the steps to the back door. The damage was immense. He could see the way the metal hinges had twisted and buckled where the door had been yanked free.
Oh, Jesus!
He leaned against the outer wall for a moment. He breathed deeply a few times and crept into the silent kitchen. A strip of moonlight fell through the doorway behind them, but it was very dark inside. Snow blew in and clung gently to Cliff's back and shoulders. It had piled up on the floor. It moved along very slowly and very deliberately. With great reluctance, Cliff stepped out of the triangle of light the moon provided and went into the shadows. His eyes began to adjust to the gloom, and he was able to discern the shapes of furniture out in the living room beyond.
Hey,
he whispered hoarsely.
Is anybody here?
He moved another few inches into the deepening shadows.
Libby! Mark!
He began to take another step when a sound, loud and strident, shattered the stillness. Cliff cried out in surprise and threw his hands up in front of his face. The sound continued for another couple of seconds and then stopped. He realized it was an electric sound. In fact, it was a sound he recognized. He heard it several times earlier in the day. It was Libby's text alert sound. It had come from somewhere very close to him. His heart was beating hard as he moved through the kitchen trying to pinpoint where it had come from. He came around to the side near the sink and was feeling his way along the counter when he stumbled over something lying on the floor in front of him. He grabbed onto the edge of the counter, loudly knocking over a box of cereal, and managed to keep his feet. He turned, leaned down, and peered at what it was he had tripped over. It was Libby's ankle. She was lying face down on the floor. Cliff's mouth dropped open as he took in the shape of her. In the semi-darkness, it was tough to make out details, but he thought that her right arm was missing. As his eyes continued to adjust to the low light, he could tell that whatever she was wearing had been mercilessly shredded and torn. He felt his Thanksgiving dinner begin to rise. He turned away from her and vomited loudly. The sound of it splashing against the floor caused him to do it again. When he had finished retching, Cliff stood up and looked around wildly, trying not to hyperventilate. That's when he heard a sound from somewhere beyond the unlit hallway that separated the kitchen from the living room. He wasn't sure about it, and he strained to listen for anything that disturbed the silence. At first, there was nothing, but as his ears adjusted to the quiet, he thought he could just make out the sound of breathing. Very slow and deliberate. Like someone out there in the dark was trying to be just as quiet as he was. Cliff took a step back, being careful not to step on Libby. His eyes never left the room ahead of him. Without bothering to whisper, he called out, "Mark?" There was a shuffling sound, and then the painful squeal of a floorboard as something very heavy moved. Without another moment's hesitation, he turned and bolted for the door. When Cliff came running around the house and down the drive, Brooke turned the key in the ignition and started the car. He threw a look back over his shoulder towards the house and then slid along the side of the car to his door. He yanked it open, fell into his seat, and slammed it shut again.
"Go!"
"Cliff, what happened? Was the truck..."
"Go!" he shouted. "Just go!"
Brooke threw the car into reverse and back down the driveway, watching through the rearview mirror. She reached the end of the driveway and backed out onto the road, turning back the way they'd come.
"Cliff, I texted Libby. I haven't gotten an answer back yet, though."
"I know."
Cliff shut his eyes and rubbed them with the backs of his hands.
"Come on, we gotta go."
"What does that mean? How do you know?"
Brooke turned her head and looked at Cliff.
"What happened back there? Is she okay?"
Cliff looked out the back windshield.
"Never mind. We've got to get out of here, now."
"Not never mind. You tell me what you saw."
Tears formed at the corners of her eyes.
"What happened to Libby?"
"Drive faster,"
Cliff said as they pulled away from Mark and Libby's house. He grabbed Brooke's cell phone from the dashboard and opened it up.
"We'll talk about it in a minute."
Brooke stepped on the gas and they shot forward. With tears streaming down her cheeks, she began to sob.
"Fuck you, Cliff. We'll talk about it now."
Her eyes flicked from the road to Cliff.
"Who are you calling?"
911.
Brooke grimaced and squeezed her eyes shut, her foot still pressing on the gas.
"Oh, God."
She snuffled back snot and tears and looked at Cliff again.
You tell me what happened.
Cliff looked up from the phone in his hand to respond, but anything he might have said was cut short.
Brooke, look out!
Was all he had time to say. What happened next only took a few seconds. Brooke looked out the windshield. They were approaching the decrepit old graveyard, bouncing along and still accelerating, when a giant black shadow came running out from between the crooked stones. It stepped easily over the 4-foot stone wall and darted out into the road in front of the car. It turned its massive bulk to face them, its silver eyes implacable and flat, and it let out one more ear-splitting scream that went on and on. Then the collision. The airbags deployed, and everything became shattering glass, screeching tires, and crunching metal. The force of impact was like hitting an oak tree. There was a blur of dark hair and huge arms flailing against the hood. Claws shrieked against steel as the unending scream reached an unbearable crescendo. The force of impact shoved Cliff and Brooke forward hard against their seatbelts, their heads slamming into the rough nylon of the airbags before they bounced back into their seats. Neither of them heard it happen, but both front tires had been blown out. Then it was over. Neither Brooke nor Cliff moved for a while. The car was making a hissing sound, but neither of them noticed. Brooke had been knocked unconscious, her head lolling on her neck against her window. Cliff, meanwhile, began to stir. He sat up with a wince and a hiss as a spasm of pain shot all the way to his shoulder.
Oh, goddammit!
Using his left arm, he reached out and grabbed onto Brooke's headrest and pulled himself upright. He squirmed, turning himself in his seat so that he could reach the door handle with his left hand. His hurt arm got squeezed between his body and the seat, and he gritted his teeth. He reached out and pulled the handle, pushing the door open with his foot. He leaned forward, putting his feet on the ground, and gingerly stood up. He shuffled around to the front of the car, his earlier fear muted by shock. The damage to the front end of the car was amazing. The hood and grille were deeply crimped inward where they had hit the thing, as if they had run into a telephone pole instead of a living being. The bumper was hanging, twisted out of shape, and a plume of steam rose into the air from the crushed radiator. Long, ugly grooves reached from the windshield to the headlights. Cliff saw that the tires had exploded, tread hanging off the rims in rubbery strips. The windshield had a spider web of cracks radiating out from the lower right corner where the hood had pushed back into it. Incredibly, the headlights were still shining, but something was obscuring the one on the driver's side. Cliff limped around and knelt down. A patch of coarse, dark hair was matted against the light by a wet red smear of blood. He reached out to touch it, and then thought better of it, pulling his hand back. There was more hair and more blood spread across the destroyed front end and all over the ground. This reminded Cliff of what it was they had hit. He stood up hastily and spun around. He looked out into the road where something huge should have laid dying or dead, but the road was empty. He was confused. The car had pounded into that thing at nearly 40 miles an hour. He took a few uncertain steps forward, searching the road for more blood and hair. He walked as far ahead as the headlights illuminated and saw no further trace. It was like they had hit an invisible force field. He stood out in the road a moment longer, looking right and then left off into the dark trees. He scanned the old cemetery from which the thing had come running. It was filled with black shadows and revealed nothing but gravestones. Cliff dragged himself back to the car and gently settled into his seat. He searched the dashboard for Brooke's phone, but it wasn't there. He leaned carefully over, trying not to move his right arm too much, and reached down between his legs. After a few moments of scrabbling around on the floor, his fingers closed over the phone. Next to him, Brooke was starting to regain consciousness. She was moving her head back and forth and murmuring. Cliff reached out and tenderly stroked her face with the back of his hand. He held the phone down in front of him and dialed, holding it up to his ear, and waited for the response.
911, what is your emergency?
Hi. My name is Cliff Morgan, and I need to report an accident.
From the November 29th edition of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Local couple disappears in a bizarre missing persons case. A Cincinnati couple was reported missing last weekend in the city of Conington, Ohio, 2 hours southwest of Cleveland. Cliff and Brooke Morgan of Mount Healthy had been visiting family over Thanksgiving when their black Volkswagen Jetta was discovered wrecked and empty of passengers on a heavily wooded backcountry road Thanksgiving night. At approximately 9:07 p.m., 911 received what the dispatcher called a very strange call for help from Mr. Morgan. He reported that he and his wife had hit a large unidentified animal with their car and that they needed assistance. He also reported that there was some problem involving family members that they had been visiting and that emergency medical assistance was needed. When law enforcement and emergency services arrived on the scene, they found the battered car, but no sign of Mr. or Mrs. Morgan. Upon investigating the home of Mark and Elizabeth Welker, the family members they had been visiting, it was discovered that they too were missing, along with their two sons, Dylan, age 6, and Garrett, age 4. There were signs of forced entry into the Welker residence, as well as signs of a struggle within, including blood and torn clothing. A large-scale search has been mounted by the Tuscarawas County PD and has been widened to include the area surrounding the nearby towns of Eastchurch, Dover, and Griffithstown. This is not the first time that disappearances have been reported along this particular stretch of road. Continued on page A-11.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
And that was The Visitor by R.K. Combrink. A good reminder to just send out cards for Thanksgiving. Keep you away from those pesky warlock graves. A little about the author. R.K. Combrink is a writer and artist who lives in Cincinnati, Ohio with his wife Elise and two sons, Colin and Cole. He's a founding cast member of the popular horror podcast Night of the Living Podcast. He likes his iced tea unsweet, but that's just cause he's sweet enough. And he genuinely believes in Sasquatch, by the way. Do you, by God? Well.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend, and hit the bricks, will you? If you see Sasquatch out there, don't worry. It's just a neighbor's wife, poor old gal. That is one severe woman. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. And until next time, y'all, go fuck yourselves. I gotta come up with something different. Good night, y'all.